Phantom Doubleday Dell Audio Publishing presents Star Wars, Tyrant's Test, Book 3 of the Black Fleet Crisis by Michael P. QB McDowell. Three levels down from Rohukrohu, the Well of the Dead appeared as a solid green wall ahead of Chewbacca and his son, Lumpawaru. This was the Shadow Forest, deep in the Roshia jungle of Kashyyyk, where little light penetrated the dense canopies. The most numerous inhabitants were the tiny barb-tongued needlebugs, whose sucking proboscis could pierce the tough Roshia bark and draw on the juices within. The most dangerous inhabitants were the elusive Kekrendor, the five-limbed Shadow Keepers, which preferred the taste of meat. The Shadow Keepers would not attack an adult Wookiee, but long history had made the Kekregro the personification of the unseen enemy. And it was the rare Wookiee who would not reach for his weapon on seeing one. And more, Chewbacca had explained to his son as they journeyed through the Wookiee hunting ground in preparation for Lumpawarum's Hurtiak, his coming-of-age ceremony. This rite of passage was a hallowed step in Wookiee maturation. Chewbacca had returned from his life debt to Han Solo, to his home world, to guide his son through this sacred time. Chewbacca looked at his son appraisingly. The young Wookiee was much less hungry for this important rite of passage than Chewbacca had been at his age. Chewbacca realized that this was part of the price his son had paid for his absence. In honoring a life debt to Han Solo, Chewbacca had left his son to be raised by his mother and grandfather. He could not fault their love or care, but something had been missing. Something to spark the Raktor, the defiant fire that was a Wookiee's heart. Having hidden from view, Chewbacca watched his son. The young Wookiee was not stalking anything. To Chewbacca's disappointment, Lumpawarum had gone perhaps 100 timid paces into a thicket and found himself a hiding place. But as time passed, Chewbacca became aware that something was stalking him. He sniffed the air sharply. 8 meters away, another Wookiee rose silently from the Roshia leaves. It was one of Chewbacca's many second cousins, and the lightest-footed stalker in the family. Chewbacca turned to him angrily. "Why do you intrude on my son's Hurtiak?" he asked. "Malatabek sent me to find you," Freya responded. "She has received news that could not wait on your return. It is the one to whom you owe your life debt. Han Solo has been taken by the enemies of Princess Leia. He is a prisoner of the Yvetha." The decision that loomed before Chewbacca was distasteful, but it was not difficult. "Come to me, first child," he called. "My honor brother is in peril, and I must go to him." Wincing, Han opened a puffy purple eye crusted with blood and forced the room to come into focus. "Barth," he said. The flight engineer was sitting with his back against the opposite wall.
"Commodore!"
Barth scrambled across the rough floor to Han's side.
"I wasn't sure you were ever going to wake up. Sir, don't take this wrong, but I hope you don't feel as bad as you look."
Han let his cellmate help him up to a sitting position.
This isn't so bad. I've been beat up by experts. The Yvetha, strictly amateurs."
Han straightened a leg, winced, and leaned back against the wall.
"On the other hand, they're amateurs with stamina."
Han had let Leia talk him into taking command of the combined New Republic forces gathering in Farlek's sector. In the Kurnacht cluster of that sector, a race called the Yvetha, led by the brutal dictator Nilspar, viceroy of the Duskin League, had carried out genocidal raids on several worlds. Han had been ambushed while leading a fleet of ships into the region, and Han and his flight engineer had been taken prisoner. His ship's captain, Strias, had been murdered. Han and Barth glanced warily at Strias's corpse, which lay a few feet away from them.
"Commodore, I think we're going to die here, too," Barth said.
Han grimaced as he stood, but erased the pain from his face before he turned toward the young officer. Lieutenant, our captors went to a lot of trouble to grab us. They're not about to discard us now.
You can't let them make you afraid. That just gives them what they want. A way to control you.
The Beyrus clan estate in Imperial City was almost large enough to be a city in its own right. Within Exmoor's walls were two parks, a forest, a small lake, and 21 structures, including the 100-meter-tall Elodia Tower with its external spiral staircase. The metal and stone of the old tower gleamed as it had when Bail Organa had brought Leia as a young girl to play with the clan's many children while he and the senator met. Now, Doman Beyrus, chairman of the New Republic's Defense Council, received Leia in a room she had never before been privileged to enter. The clan council room, on the top level of the tower. Doman's welcome was warm.
Little princess.
He stood as though he expected her to come to him with a hug, as in the old days.
Is there any further news?
Leia came no closer. She had just learned that her old ally had been behind a summons asking for her resignation as president of the Senate. No, there's been no word from the Yveatha.
Perhaps Han's kidnapping was not the Yveatha's doing.
We now have the flight recorders from several of the Recon X escorts. There's no mistaking the Yveathan thrust ship. There's really no question about it. This is Neil Spar's work. Doman nodded.
In any event, I'm glad you came to see me before the council sits.
Leia settled into a chair. I had to come see you. I don't understand why you've done this. Doman looked at her gravely.
Clan Beyrus is and always will be the friend of House Organa.
Then withdraw the summons.
I will gladly do so, on your promise that you will not carry the war to N'Zoth to rescue a loved one. Can you give me that promise?
Are you asking me to give Han up? I can't believe that you could call yourself my friend and ask me to do that.
Doman shook his head sadly.
Two other men suffered the same fate as Han. Do you care as much for their return?
I'm sorry for the others, and I want them safely returned, but I won't pretend that they mean as much to me as Han does.
Doman Beyrus smiled.
You need not pretend here, but can you sit in the office of the President of the Senate of the New Republic and say that? Because unless you're ready to give all three lives equal weight, I do not believe you should sit in that office.
You want me to limit my options before I even know why the Yveatha did this, Leia said. But whatever their reason, they'll be watching our response. Don't you think the worst possible sign we could give them is that the New Republic has no confidence in its elected leader? Don't you think Neil Spar will be delighted to see the Senate distracted by infighting?
Leia, there need not be any infighting. Step aside until this is over. Let one of us carry the weight. You won't be shut out, I promise you.
I can't do that.
Leia stood.
Please, on our friendship, on my father's memory, I ask you one last time. Doman, withdraw the summons.
I'm sorry, little princess. There's too much at stake. I have a duty.
And so do I.
Leia's eyes clouded with a mixture of anger and regret.
I'll be leaving now, Senator. I have a lot to attend to before the council session.
When Chewbacca returned to the Millennium Falcon, impatient to go rescue Han, he found that his cousins, Jaudrill, Dryanta, and Shoran, intended to accompany him. Even though Dryanta was a pilot and Jaudrill a ship systems engineer, Chewbacca would have none of their plan. No, he growled as he began running through the Falcon's pre-flight procedures. Jaudrill stood close behind him. She insisted, "We are family. The life debt to Han Solo does not stop with you." Chewbacca knew he could not turn them down. "Go then. Get aboard," he said. Then a new voice called him. Chewbacca turned and saw Lumba Warump standing in the wooden arch of the landing platform entryway. He was wearing his bowcaster. The young Wookiee drew closer. "Take me with you," he said. "I will be neither child nor adult until you return. I do not belong in the nursery tree or in the council ring. Go," Chewbacca said. He seized Lumpawarum by the arm and sent him toward the ship with a push. Moments later, the ship lifted and wheeled toward the sky. The Teljikon vagabond had finally ceased shuddering and groaning around its prisoners. With the starship once again hurtling through hyperspace, at last there was silence.
Atta girl,
Lando said, patting the wall of the chamber in which he and the others floated.
It'll take a lot more than one rusty old escort frigate to run you down.
But Master Lando, this is terrible, simply terrible,
said 3PO, his damaged arm jerking spastically with each gesture.
That ship could have rescued us, and now we've run away from it. We may even have destroyed it.
Trust me on this. A rescue by an Imperial warlord in the core is no rescue worth having, Lando said.
I see what you mean, sir.
R2-D2 burbled a terse comment.
Master Lando, why didn't the Vagabond Shield stop the ion barrage?
Now that's an interesting question, said Lando. The answer might be because there are no shields. No ray shields, anyway.
No shields? 3PO echoed. Isn't that unusual and dangerous?
It's unusual, Lando began.
Master Lando, this is intolerable. I am certain that Master Luke did not intend for us to be marooned on a vessel with no ray shielding. No wonder my circuits are so sluggish and R2 has been so peevish. This could have the most serious consequences for us. We simply must leave this vessel now.
That's it, Lando said, snapping his fingers. That's the reason there's no ray shielding outside. There are no droids. No computers, no electronic devices of any kind on the hull. Just organic machines with organic sensors and organic repair mechanisms. Different rules. What do you think, Lobot?
The issues for biological systems exposed to radiation are rate of damage versus the efficiency of repair, Lobot said. And heat absorption per unit of area versus heat dispersal per unit of area. The integumentary system of some organisms can provide effective protection for internal structures against charged particle radiation.
Lando was staring with open concern.
Lobot, what is wrong with you?
Was there an error in my summation?
I'm not talking about your summation. I'm talking about you. Now, don't take this wrong, old pal, but your conversational style's regressed back to early mechanical.
After a few moments, Lobot stopped fussing with his suit.
I confess, I am having difficulty maintaining a positive outlook,
he said, his eyes still downcast.
Perhaps you could share with me some of the reasons for your apparent optimism.
Didn't you feel her wheel around before we jumped into hyperspace? We escaped from the Prockith, and we're headed back to where we do have friends. And we now have all the air we need to hang on until they find us. Things could be a lot worse.
Things are worse. We're headed for an unknown point within an enormous volume of space in a ship that routinely manages to escape detection for years at a time, said Lobot. We have no food and limited water, and the droids and the suits are both running low on power. We can neither control the ship nor communicate with it. We're being guided through public spaces and kept out of private spaces. If we're going to get control of the ship, we need to be treated like the owners, not visitors.
But we can't be more than 2 or 3 compartments away from the bow, according to the map R2's been keeping, Lando said. I say we keep looking for the control center.
There is no reason to believe that the control nexus is located in the bow, said Lobot.
Lando peered at Lobot questioningly. I thought it was you who pointed us in this direction.
On general probabilities derived from known designs, said Lobot, but this vessel was not derived from known designs.
One secret at a time will be enough to keep me happy, said Lando. Why are you so sure the bridge isn't forward?
Look at the map. The compartments we've entered over the last few days have gradually been defining a space in the center of the ship to which we have no access.
Then we have to keep going, don't we? Lando said. The link could be in the next compartment or the one after that.
There may not even be a link to the center.
If we have to, we can make one.
Lando flashed a grin.
But right now, it looks like we have a bet to settle.
Pardon me?
Nothing like a little wager to keep things interesting. So, what are you willing to risk on your opinion that says we die here like trapped rats?
Lobot stared blankly at Lando. Then his normally expressionless face began to shudder and twitch.
You're crazy, Lando. I've been meaning to tell you that for years.
A first time for everything,
Lando said, still startled by a sound he had never heard before, Lobot's laughter.
But you didn't answer my question. Are you in or out?
Lobot grabbed a drifting boot and threw it across to Lando.
I know you too well to take a wager against you. Let's go find that control nexus.
Pardon me, Master Lando?
Lando was exploring the inner face of a new compartment with his hands, while Lobot did the same on the outer face.
And what is it, 3PO?
Could you explain how exactly Colonel Packpacott and the rest of the expedition team is to locate us?
Lando kept working.
They weren't ever supposed to lose us. Hammax's 4A team had orders to go in hard and fast, disable the Vagabond before it could clear or break down the interdiction field.
I see, but you persuaded Colonel Packpacott to let us try to go in gently and slowly.
Lando shrugged.
Something like that.
Lobot raised an eyebrow at the evasion. 3PO persisted.
But was no thought given to contingency plans? Surely the possibility of the Vagabond escaping came up in your strategy sessions with Colonel Packpacott?
Of course it did. But sending out a rescue beacon, for example, might attract the attention of outsiders. Remember, this was a new Republic intelligence operation. Getting control of the Vagabond was only part of the goal. Doing it quietly was the rest.
I see. You were forbidden to add a beacon to our equipment.
No, that was my decision. I figured if we had one, we might use it. I elected to remove the temptation.
I'm certain I don't understand, Master Lando.
Well, you don't have all the pieces of the puzzle.
Lando grinned.
But see, my orders and Packpacott's orders don't quite coincide. New Republic Intelligence has hundreds of people who do nothing but take apart alien weapons, looking for new design ideas. The man who sent me out here, call him the Admiral, had a notion that this ship might be something more than a weapon. And as usual, he seems to have been right.
R2 chirped a question, and 3PO translated.
Master Lando, R2 would like to know if we have any way of signaling the man who sent you out here.
Lando pulled a silver cylinder out of one of his contact suit pockets. He flipped it in midair, then tucked it safely away.
They'll be able to find us when they need to.
3PO cocked his head.
Is that a transmitter? Can we call for help?
It transmits the signal that activates Lady Luck's slave circuits across hyperspace, too, now, thanks to the Admiral. The slave circuits then bring the ship to me.
Pardon me, Master Lando, but have you had that device in your possession all this time?
Now, that's a stupid question, 3PO, even for a protocol droid. Yes, I've had it all along. The reason I haven't used it is that we don't have control of the Vagabond. If I call Lady Luck, the yacht will either spook the Vagabond into running or firing. And if Lady Luck is put out of commission, we're going to be in real trouble. Is that clear?
Perfectly clear, Master Lander.
The bow compartment of the Vagabond was at least five times more voluminous than any of the other areas that Lando's party had previously discovered. The chamber was shaped like a fat disc standing on edge and had eight portals evenly spaced around its rim. Lando and Lobot began the now familiar drill of searching the smooth, apparently featureless surfaces for contact triggers. Lando found only one, but that contact brought a pattern of curving, evenly spaced projections curling out from the outer face of the chamber. Lobot studied the new features.
Maybe this is where they hung honored sacrifices like figureheads on the bow.
Lando grinned. I think that unlikely. With the faintest puff of thruster gas, he began a slow rotation until he was floating upside down.
You know, Lobot, they look like handholds this way. Handholds and footrests.
What are you thinking, Lando?
Asked Lobot. Grabbing a projection, Lando used that leverage to turn himself so his back was to the inner face, allowing him to grasp the next projection with his other hand. His legs were too short to reach the bottom corners of the rectangle.
I'm thinking seating, though Wookiees and Elomen would be more comfortable than I am.
Lobot turned himself around as Lando had.
Theater?
Maybe. And maybe the show won't begin until the audience is sitting down. R2, 3PO, get on over here.
As soon as they were all in place, the chamber was plunged into absolute darkness. There was a brightening glow opposite them, a glow that seemed much farther away than the outer face of the chamber. The glow increased, sharpening and separating into several distinct bright masses. Then, in the span of a few heartbeats, they were looking out upon a beautiful ruddy brown planet, with sparkling blue oceans, all cloaked in a veil of lacy white clouds. A brilliant star illuminated the planet's face, which was sculpted by the wandering lines of black mountains and dark green river courses. Two moons crept along invisible orbits. In awe, Lando whispered, "Homeworld." Lobot spoke up.
"It's an orrery, an enormous shadow box model of the Kelda system."
The refrigerated cask being loaded into the cargo box of Admiral Drayson's land speeder had made the fastest possible journey from a remote planet known as Malta Obex to Coruscant. Even so, Hiram Drayson wore his impatience openly as he watched the stevedores maneuver the large coffin-shaped object. "Excuse me." Drayson turned to see a white-haired, sun-bronzed gentleman peering at him.
"Yes?"
"Are you Harkin Dyson? The cargo master said that the owner was here for the pickup."
"Yes," Drayson said. "And you are..."
"Johto Beckles. I was in charge of the excavation. I'd like to thank you."
"For what, Dr. Eccles?"
"If you hadn't picked up the contract, our trip to Malta Obex would have been cancelled. We might not have been able to recover the bodies of our colleagues who died in the avalanche there. And I want to assure you again that none of this delayed delivery of your material."
Eccles nodded toward the cask. "I know it didn't." Drayson flashed a reassuring smile.
"Thank you for your good offices, Dr. Eccles. The shuttle will return you to Malta Obex at your convenience. I've already given the captain his instructions. And please, relay my thanks to the rest of your team."
"I will," said Eccles. "And by the way, I expect they'll have quite a bit more material recovered and catalogued by the time I rejoin them. You can expect us to return with more than enough to allow us to authenticate the possible killer artifacts we found with the remains."
"Very good," said Drayson, moving toward the landspeeder. "Now, if you'll excuse me..."
It was a 20-minute flight north from Newport to the nearest Alpha Blue Technical Services section. The small signs bearing the generic and easily forgotten business name Intermatic RC accounted for the traffic in and out of the site's two private hangars. Dr. Joy Eycroft greeted Drayson with a professional smile that gave no hint of their 13-year relationship. But as soon as the cask was safely in place beside the large examination plate, Drayson chased away the junior officers who'd helped unload it and added a quick kiss to his greeting.
"Scandalous, Admiral. I'm on duty."
"Yes, you are. Let's get it open," he said.
"First things first," she said, pulling a cord that brought two full-body isolation suits descending from the ceiling on their umbilicals.
"I have to change into something more comfortable."
It took her the better part of 5 minutes to don her ISO suit, and then the better part of 5 more to help him into his and seal the lab. But it took almost no time at all to switch off the cask's stabilization system, break the seal, remove the lid, and vacuum away the fomite packing material. Then they stood at opposite ends of the cask, looking down at a creature that had died more than a century ago and been buried by its friends on the moving ice of Malta Obex. Its oval, smooth-skinned body was nearly as wide as the cask. Its slender, double-jointed limbs would not have fit inside if they had not been neatly folded, so that its clumsy-looking three-fingered hands covered its face, and its legs made a neat square and X below its body.
"It's no wonder,"
Eycroft said, shaking her head.
"What?"
She moved to the side of the cask.
"These limbs must be 5 or 6 meters long altogether, and with a cross-section not more than 6 centimeters. A perfectly dreadful adaptation for cold. It's amazing that this one lived long enough to die where it did."
Drayson nodded.
"I want the genetic material extracted and sequenced immediately."
"Understood," she said. "Help me move it up on the plate."
The Yvethan Viceroy's personal aide, Ere Pale, ushered Proctor Dar Bile into the Blood Garden, where Proctor Tal Fran and Viceroy Nil Spar were waiting. Following the ancient custom of submission, the subordinate Yvetha offered their necks to each other, then to the Viceroy. Dar Bile addressed Nil Spar.
"Darama, I hear it proclaimed that your breedery gloriously affirms your vigor."
15 nestings, all full and ripening," said Nil Spar. "The scent of it is intoxicating."
"Your blood has always been strong, Nil Spar, but it has never been stronger than it is now."
Nil Spar regarded him coolly. "I would rather have truth than flattery from my old friends. What news of my flagship?"
Darbile replied,
"Pride of Yvetha is fully ready. The holding chambers for the hostages have been completed, and they are being loaded this very day. What is the prospect for more fighting?"
"The vermin have not bared their necks or withdrawn. She who claims honor in her own name still defies us. In the last 3 days, the vermin fleet grew by at least 80 vessels. It has now dispersed into the boundary regions of the All, and our vessels there have lost contact with many of these intruders.
D'Arbillet frowned.
I am greatly surprised that they value the lives of their own species less than they value the lives of the other vermin in Kona Cluster. Perhaps we do not hold who we think we hold.
No. Han Solo is Leia's mate and consort. And these are relations of great meaning to the vermin.
The Viceroy turned to Tal Fran.
Tell me what you have learned studying the prisoners.
They are uncomfortable with blood, even their own weak blood.
Is that their greatest weakness?
Tal Fran hesitated before answering.
No, their greatest weakness is that they are impure.
The strong do not slay the weak, and the weak do not yield to the strong. The pale vermin think of self first and kinship last.
And you find the evidence of this where?
It is why 8,000 imperial slaves still serve us, and why these two prisoners remain in our hands. They fear death more than betrayal.
The answer elicited a grunt of delight from the Viceroy.
Now, tell me, what is the greatest strength of the vermin?
It is as with all lesser species. Their strength is in their numbers. They overwhelm their worlds with their unclean fecundity. If they acted in concert as one kinhold, they could overwhelm us.
But they do not, said D'Arbillet.
No, said Tal Fran. Their great weakness undermines their great strength.
Nils Barr smiled.
What advice would you offer, Proctor? How shall I make this Leia show me her neck?
Tal Fran answered evenly.
It is time we showed her our hostages. And since the pale vermin are uncomfortable with blood, we should find a way to remind them that we are not.
Inbound to Utharis on route to Ctipithon, the Mud Sloth came out of hyperspace crippled by a data bus power surge that left the port navigation sensors and the NavCom unable to talk to each other.
This is why you should never buy a bargain starship,
Luke grumbled as he climbed back out of the service access compartment.
What do you mean?
Asked Akana.
Oh, just that the Verpine cut every corner they could building this thing.
Luke slid the access panel back into place.
We're going to be delayed at Utharis.
I can't bear the thought of any more delay this close to the end, this close to the circle.
I know, Luke said.
But this ship won't go into hyperspace again until she's gone into a service bay.
Utharis was in the grip of war fever. Even though Kornak Cluster was more than 200 light-years away, Utharis had a border world's heightened sensitivity to matters of interplanetary politics. It was impossible to go anywhere in Taldak without hearing about the clouds of war gathering over Farlak Sector. Disguised again as Lee Stone, Luke found a repair yard called Starway Services.
Sure, we can take care of you, Stone,
said the yard manager.
But it'll be 3 days before we can even look at it.
3 days? Why are you so busy?
Because of the war, of course.
Akana at Luke's side narrowed her gaze.
War? What are you talking about?
Don't you ever link to the grids? The New Republic and the Duskin League have been growling at each other for months.
Akana turned to Luke.
Did you know about this?
I heard something of it on Talos. I didn't want to worry you. It was only rumor then.
The manager's casual acceptance of war on his doorstep chilled Akana.
It's too soon. Luke's not ready for this,
she thought as she followed him out of the depot.
I'm taking him exactly where I don't want him to go, right into the heart of temptation. He's still trying to direct the current. He's not ready to watch others fight without raising a hand of his own. We can't stay here,
she whispered when they were outside.
It doesn't feel safe.
Luke led them back toward the slidewalk.
I don't see a lot of alternatives.
For all we know, Ctipithon could be one of the battlegrounds. Don't you think it'd be a good thing to be able to count on our hyperdrive?
She tried desperately to find a fear that would move him.
If we linger here too long, we can count on more Imperial agents finding us. We can't let that happen.
Even the New Republic can't find us, thanks to your tricks,
said Luke. All we have to do is find a quiet place to play tourist for a few days.
Besides, I want to learn more about what's ahead of us, and it may take a while to sort the facts from the rumors.
Luke, the darker the clouds, the more important it is for us to move quickly.
The war's already started, Luke said grimly. We can't arrive before the storm. We can only hope it leaves Jitipatan untouched.
Luke, it's not that the circle is in danger, Akana pressed. The danger is that we'll lose touch with them. I'm afraid they may already have left Jitipatan, and any sign they leave for me could be destroyed as easily as Norika's house in Grian was.
I can ask for another tracking report on Star Morning, find out where it went. That should tell us something about the Circle's plans.
And what will we chase them in? The mudsloth? You were right, Luke. We can't count on our ship. We should have something faster, more reliable. Please, we have to leave here now.
I'm not going to help you steal a starship, Akana. Even before he spoke, she realized she had made a mistake. They shared a goal, but he still observed limits on the means he would allow himself to employ in pursuing it.
You're right. Oh, you're right. I don't know what I was thinking. It's just so hard being this close after so long, she said. If we don't find them...
We'll find them, Luke said.
I want to believe that, but I don't know if I can bear another disappointment, she said,
tears glittering in the corners of her eyes.
Forgive me. It isn't that I thought you a thief.
I know, he said. It's forgotten. She smiled gratefully at him and let him draw her into the curl of his arm.
If we must stay here, then at least let's get away from Tardak.
First things first, Luke said. I want to go back to the ship and put out some queries. I want to find out everything I can about what we might find in the Kunak cluster, about what our people are up against.
That was the last thing Akana wanted.
Of all the impulses capable of moving Luke's hand toward his lightsaber, she feared the power of his loyalty to his sister most. In frustration, she pulled away from him.
What?
He asked. What is it? Akana sensed his confusion and uncertainty and targeted her words there.
I'm just wondering if maybe we've gone as far as we can together. Maybe it was a mistake to make you part of this. If you don't have the commitment or the trust...
Akana,
I have to think about what to do now, she said,
and stepped neatly off the slidewalk. Luke whirled about but did not follow, letting the slidewalk carry him on toward the port. Their gazes locked together for a moment. Then she turned away. Eyes now closed, she studied the current's flow through and around him, reading its eddies. There was exasperation there, but a new and still raw worry as well.
Good, she thought. Wonder about me. Worry that I'll steal the ship on my own and leave you behind. Then perhaps you won't worry so much about other people's wars or think about joining them. Your place is with me, Luke Skywalker. I still have lessons to teach you.
Han had lost track of time. There was no day and night cycle in the brightly lit Yavathan prison cell, no regular meals to mark out intervals. By the time the cell door did finally open, they were so weak from hunger and dehydration that they could barely stand. The prisoners were taken to a large chamber with a high-domed ceiling decorated with scarlet accents. They were seated at either end of a long bench, facing a low platform and a large window beyond. There was one oddity. Lieutenant Barth's wrists were bound to a bar running the length of the bench, low behind their hips. Han's were not. Then Viceroy Neil Spar entered the chamber. He was leading an entourage of four. One carried a folding stool, which he set up facing the prisoner's bench. A second carried a tall stand topped by a silver sphere, which he placed a meter to the right of the stool. Those two left when they had shed their burdens. The two who remained took up positions behind Neil Spar as he settled on the stool. Neil Spar ignored Barth and focused his attention on Han.
General Solo, you appear to be the only one who can save thousands more of your kind from dying in shame. I am here to give you that opportunity.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Princess Leia has recklessly sent more ships to threaten us.
Good for her.
And issued foolish ultimatums. She does not understand us. Perhaps when you do, you can open her eyes.
Go on.
Our claim to these stars is natural and ancient. Leia's threats do not move us. We will never give up that which is ours, or share it with those who were not born of the All. If your forces do not withdraw, there will be war, terrible and bloody. We will never yield, General Solo. And none of your soldiers will enjoy my mercy as you have.
Han scoffed. Thanks for the advice. What do you want from me?
Persuade her to recall her fleet.
Barth was unable to contain his eagerness. You'll let us go? The Viceroy did not look away from Han.
You are more useful to me as a witness than as a martyr, General.
He rose from his stool.
Come, look.
The Viceroy led Han to the window.
Squinting, Han looked out on a field of giant silver spheres, Aramadia-class thrust ships.
Neil Spar gazed proudly at the sight. Do you understand? You cannot prevail against us, but you can preserve your children's blood if you choose to.
Only if I'm willing to forget the blood that's already been spilled.
Neil Spar said nothing, but Barth was nearly frantic with fear.
Han, they're going to kill us.
Would you rather live as a coward?
Han's eyes burned into the Viceroy's. Go to blazes. I won't help you.
Neil Spar nodded agreeably and spoke a word in Yavathan. The two guards bound Han to the bar like Barth. Barth continued to beg.
Please, do something. Tell him you've changed your mind.
Han looked at him grimly. Get a grip on yourself, Lieutenant. He doesn't deserve to enjoy this. The Viceroy moved closer, his fighting crests becoming engorged until they seemed to be two crimson slashes from temple to ear.
You, vermin, wish to teach me a lesson. I will offer you one in return.
With a slash of his claw, Nil Spar ripped open Barth's bare torso from hip to shoulder, shattering ribs, pulling soft organs from their cavities. Nil Spar stepped back and absently sucked the blood from his claw.
Perhaps you understand us a little better now.
A strange new sound was permeating the vagabond. Lando signaled his group for silence. Straining, they could pick out a buzzing whine, which seemed to come from several compartments away. As the ship began to shudder, the sound grew louder. Lando turned to Lobot.
Sounds like we're under fire again. Someone must have followed us out of hyperspace from Procket. Seal up your suit, fast.
By the time Lobot had snapped his helmet in place, the chamber's even glow was flickering. Then the illumination failed entirely.
So had Freepio's courage.
Oh, this is ghastly. My circuits and gears can't bear anymore. Master Lando, you simply must do something. Surely now you will signal Lady Luck.
Forget it.
Lando jetted toward the chamber's forward portal.
I'm going to find out what that noise is all about.
But when he pressed his hand against the portal's trigger, nothing happened. He repeated the motion, then turned toward Lobot.
We're locked in.
Suddenly, the chamber was filled with a near-deafening wail.
Lando pushed back from the portal. Someone's slicing into the ship.
Suddenly, 3PO lunged clumsily toward Lando's leg.
What the... 3PO? What are you doing?
Then a new sound made Lando forget about 3PO. It was the muted roar of an explosive decompression.
Sweet, cold starlight, we're in trouble now.
But for once, 3PO was perfectly calm. There is no reason to be fearful. I have taken care of everything.
What?
Looking down, Lando saw 3PO drifting away into the darkness with Lady Luck's beckon call clutched tightly in his hand. Lando grabbed at the pouch where the transmitter had been, unable to believe what had happened.
Do you know what you've done?
Why, of course. I have signaled the Lady Luck to come and rescue us.
No!
Lando could barely restrain his fury.
You've condemned us. There's something out there powerful enough to take on the vagabond. How long do you think Lady Luck will last after it shows up? You've called a crewless ship into a combat zone.
Lobot called out,
Lando, listen, the firing has stopped.
Lando swung his head around.
So it has, but we're not moving. I don't think she's going to move again.
He looked at 3PO. Lobot tried to reason with him.
Lando, wait, we know this ship. We have the advantage over anyone coming aboard.
With a growl, Lando pulled out his cutting blaster and pointed it at the forward entry portal. Its beam lit the chamber briefly and harshly and left a meter-wide hole that did not close.
Lando shook his head. She's really hurting.
She's not closing up the holes we're making.
All right, let's go. We have to move quickly.
Apart from the ugly smell it left hanging in the air, Lando had no qualms about burning a path through the chain of chambers. This was how they'd gotten from one place to another ever since they found themselves in the ship. But seeing that the ship was no longer healing itself, Lobot quickly became uncomfortable watching Lando do it.
Can't we at least try each portal before we destroy it? We're leaving a trail a boarding party can follow.
Lando kept working.
I'd gladly burn more holes to make it harder for them to follow us, but I don't know what I'd be cutting into.
The ship's moving again, changing direction too. Come on.
He jetted toward an opening and pulled himself through. What he saw as he pointed his lights and blaster at the opposite end of the chamber startled him to speechlessness. Six portals, each lit by a narrow ring of light, were irising open.
Lando.
I see, Lando said.
Both the chamber ahead and the one they had just left showed multiple portals lit by glow rings. Some of the portals opened to tiny dead-end chambers, others to narrow passageways, still others to the vast interspace Lando had discovered when planting the sensor limpet that had been destroyed in the recent attack. Lando turned to Lobot.
Any ideas?
The first thing the ship did was to seal all portals, giving the highest priority to containing the damage. Then, after an inventory of the damage, the next highest priority was given to restoring freedom of movement, perhaps to facilitate repairs.
Or escape, said Lando. Are you saying you think this means the attack is over?
It doesn't matter.
Lobot pointed at the portal below them, leading to the interior.
The ship has thrown all the doors open. We may never have another chance like this. The heart of the ship is that way.
Lando shook his head. Maybe. But I have to see how bad the damage is. I need to know where things stand.
The ship knows,
Lobot insisted.
When you figure out how to talk to her, let me know. Until then, we're both wasting time. I'm going to the hull to check out the breach.
Once he was alone, Lobot removed his gloves and helmet, clipping both to the equipment grid. Bending his neck forward, he lightly caressed the edges of the hammer and interface band, his fingertips playing briefly over the attachment release at the back of his head. The interface had never come off in 34 years. Not for maintenance upgrades, nor for sleep, nor for vanity. The band had become a secondary link between the halves of his own brain, allowing him to process a tremendous flood of data. His mind no longer recognized a boundary between biology and technology. His integrated consciousness bridged both. Now, his fingers explored the interface as an object apart, while he wondered what it would be like not to find it there. The inner face of the Vagabond's interspace, the open area between what Lando thought of as the ship proper and the outer hull, was covered with hexagonal cells containing sculpted Kella faces. Lando had first discovered the faces on an earlier pass through the ship, and it seemed to him that the entire ship must be tiled with them. The Kella watched with impassive eyes as he traversed the space, more sanguine about Lando's presence than he was about theirs.
Why are they here? He asked himself.
Lando kept moving forward in the interspace. Then, suddenly, he came upon portals that were sealed tight. The viewports allowed him to glimpse the reason why. A gaping slash in the outer hull that ran nearly to the bow.
This is the result of the attack we heard, Lando thought.
The best view of the damage was from the auditorium. Lando keyed the suit's comlink.
Lobot, I'm in the auditorium. There's a big hole along the starboard side, and everything forward of here is a wreck.
Is there any indication that the breach is being repaired?
It's hard to tell. I'll probably have to wait here a while to know. Lobot, the orrery is gone.
No. Gone or inactive?
Gone. Destroyed. How are you doing? Any sign of trouble back where you are? Where are you now? Still in chamber 228?
I am fine, but I do not know how to tell you where I am. I would be lost if not for R2's holomap.
You've gone into the inner passages?
Yes.
Maybe I should come back now. I've seen most of what I need to.
I would rather you did not. The silence is surprisingly agreeable. I am hearing much more clearly now. That is why I am now going to turn off my comlink.
Lobot, what's going on?
I will signal you if I want you. Until then, I will wish you good judgment, and you can wish us good luck.
Lady Luck dropped into real space just shy of a light second from Anomaly 1033 and just more than a light year from Kharkov, a red giant superstar. Colonel Papercott's best hope of finding Lando and his crew seemed to be the charts New Republic Intelligence had provided of the unknown space objects called anomalies. He thought one of them might turn out to be the Vagabond. Within moments of their arrival, Lady Luck's controls went dead under Papercott's hands. Accelerating as it turned, the yacht veered sharply some 60 degrees to starboard.
What's wrong, Colonel?
Vito Hamex, the foray commander, asked. Papercott lifted his hands from the panel and sat back in the pilot's flight couch.
Something has activated the slave circuit. The yacht is no longer under my control.